What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of Around the NBA, a podcast where I get my thoughts on the latest news, transactions, teams, and players across the league. I hope you guys are having a great week so far. I know I don't normally say that kind of stuff on here. I usually just stick to the point. I stick to basketball, and that's that. But I've just been listening to some of my episodes, my podcasts, and I've realized, I should be a little bit more personable, and just wish my audience, and my listeners, I hope you guys are having a good week. The holidays are around the corner. Thanksgiving is right around the corner. And I hope you guys have some amazing plans, to spend with, your loved ones, your friends, your family, because that's what it's all about, especially around this time of year. It can be a little depressing and sad because everything outside is dying because it's getting cold. Trees are losing their leaves. Plants are dying, so it can be kind of a depressing time. I get it. The sun's going down earlier. By like 5 o'clock, it's pitch black outside. So I understand it's a little depressing. So the only thing that makes up for it is Thanksgiving and Christmas, and maybe even New Year's if you guys really look forward to New Year's. I'm not a big New Year's guy. I'm like, meh, it is what it is. It's just the start of another year of me getting older. So, but for real, man, I really do hope you guys are having, a pretty good week. And like I said, I hope you guys enjoy your holidays here in the next couple of weeks, next month or so. I know I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to eating really well. I have some pretty good plans, so I'm pretty excited. It's my daughter's first holiday season, her first Thanksgiving, her first Christmas, so we're really looking forward to that, to experience that with her. So yeah, I know I don't really talk like this, but I've kind of figured, I should be a little bit more personable, not just get to the point, get to the basketball, because I want people to know who, not know me, but kind of get a sense of who I am. If you don't know who I am really in real life, I want to get you guys a sense of who I kind of am, So yeah, man, just before I start episodes, I'm going to try to be a little bit more friendly and just, spend a little bit of quality time with my listeners, so you guys can feel a little bit more welcomed, So other than that, man, let's get right into these topics. Well, that was short-lived. So I have a couple different topics to discuss on this week's episode. Obviously, we got a little bit of turmoil out in Brooklyn with the whole Kyrie Irving situation, Steve Nash situation, so I'm going to talk about that a little bit. Also discuss this interview that I watched on the JJ Redick podcast. I feel like I continue to talk about the JJ Redick podcast, but it's really good, man, and it really provide some good content to talk about. And on that episode, he had Joakim Noah on there. So as a Bulls fan, it really brought out some nostalgia, and I just kind of want to talk about that because it was like a flash to the past. I think that's how you say it. And of course, my team of the week, and this week is the Cleveland Cavaliers. So let's get right into it. So the first topic of this week's episode is, of course, the headlines that are coming out of Brooklyn, the Steve Nash firing and the Kyrie Irving situation. And I don't know which one to start with. I think I'll probably start with the Kyrie situation just because I don't want to dwell on it too much. I don't want to talk about it for too much. And really what I really want to talk about is just the reaction from people on the situation. And I understand where people are coming from, but I'm surprised. People are surprised by the way the team reacted to what Kyrie did. And of course, I'm talking about the whole anti-Semitic stuff. I'm sure everyone knows this by now. And he posted the link to a video or a movie from Amazon Prime that has some anti-Semitic stuff. And he just posted the link on his Instagram. And some people are saying, well, I think the team is doing too much. He didn't really necessarily say he agreed with it. He already came out and said he was anti-Semitic, yada, 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 right? And then there's the other half are saying, you don't mess with that community. You don't mess with the Jewish community, and not expect repercussions, right? I understand people's opinions on the list that the owner came out with, of the things that Kyrie has to do in order to get back onto the team. Some people are saying, that's just like a scapegoat type of thing because maybe the owner is just tired of Kyrie's antics and this is just what he's using so Kyrie can no longer be on the team. And this is just his way of, weeding him out from the team. And I could totally see that, because some of the things on the list, I don't remember the entire list. I remember seeing it. I just don't remember everything that was on. I was like, I don't know. You know, I don't know if all this makes is justifiable or makes sense, but I completely understand where he's coming from. He meaning the owner. But what gets me is the people's reaction of why they don't understand, or they don't think this is such a big deal. He just posted a link and he came out and said he was anti-Semitic already, and et cetera, et cetera. Well, the first time they confront him about it, them meaning the media, they asked him about it and he said, how can I be anti-Semitic if I know where I come from? That's not really that's not really answering the question. You know what I mean? Like, if someone asked me, are you racist? I can't respond with saying, well, I'm Mexican. How can I be racist? You can't be racist if you know where you come from. That's essentially what he said. No, that's exactly what he said. Like, you can't be anti-Semitic if you know where you come from. I'm like, I don't want to misconstrue this, and I don't want to, you know, come off as like I know this. I believe the idea that the film was portraying, or the film was saying, or at least Kyrie's ideology on this, I believe it has something to do with African-Americans come from, obviously, Africa, and that part of the world, like, the Jewish community is essentially near Africa. And basically what he was saying is Africans are Semitic, if that makes sense. So he can't be anti-Semitic because he's part of that community by being black and, you know, his ancestors coming from Africa, is what I interpreted it from everything that I read from Mike Garnett. I don't want to butcher that. I might completely be wrong on that. But the way he responded to that question of asking him if he's anti-Semitic was saying, how can I be anti-Semitic if I know where I come from? It's the exact same thing, like I just said, if someone asked me if I'm racist and I said, how can I be, and I respond with, how can I be racist if I'm Mexican and I know where I come from? Like, that's not, that's not how this works. You know what I mean? Like, just because you are a minority, that doesn't mean you can't be racist. You know, like, just, he could have easily answered that question with saying, no, I'm not anti-Semitic, and just cleared up what he was trying to get at, right? What was his point? But I don't know, man. I don't know what goes through his head sometimes. So I understand why he's being suspended and the repercussions that are being handed down to him, right? And the repercussions that he's been receiving. You know what I mean? Like, I completely understand where this is coming from. And it wasn't up until the point where he got suspended without pay, where he finally posted on Instagram saying, oh, I apologize for anybody that I hurt. I'm not anti-Semitic, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's too late for that, bro. Like, that's way too late for that. So I'm just confused again. I don't understand why people making it seem like it's why they're confused at the fact that he's being suspended over this, or like why the media is making a bigger deal than it should be in their eyes. Like, what are you talking about? Like, the Jewish community is probably one of the biggest communities you don't go after. You don't say anything. Look at what happened to Kanye. This dude just lost billions of dollars over his anti-Semitic comments. Like, it's just known. It's just known, bro. You don't go after the Jewish community. It's straightforward and it's simple as that. I don't understand where people are being so shocked and surprised by this. So that's why all I wanted to talk about that in regards to that. Like, I just didn't understand the confusion of people when it comes to this situation, when it comes to talking about the Jewish community and making it seem like, oh, he wasn't anti-Semitic, he just posted a link. It doesn't matter. You should know better than that. You know, like, you should know better than to share that. If it has anything remotely to do with anti-Semitic stuff, even if you don't agree with that part, right, you're just agreeing with, or you just want to talk about a certain aspect of the movie that I'm not exactly sure. I just know there's a certain part of the movie. I haven't watched it, obviously, but I guess there's a certain part of the movie that he agreed on, and that's why he shared it. It had nothing to do with the anti-Semitic stuff. But still, like, you got to be smarter about this kind of stuff, man. You know what I mean? But in his eyes, he wasn't being anti-Semitic because he is Semitic. I don't know, man. I don't get it. But that's not what I was trying to talk about. I just wanted to clear the air in regards to people's confusion, and I don't get their confusion in this matter. Like, just stop. You have no grounds on this. Like, what's happening to Kyrie is 100% expected. And I can't blame the media. I can't blame the organization for handling the situation that they're doing, because this is what is expected, and Kyrie should have known better. That's my two cents on that. So now on to Steve Nash. I'm not surprised at all that he was fired. I mean, he was fired when they were 2-5. I think right now they're 6-8 or 5-8, something like that. But yeah, I'm not surprised by this firing. They look terrible. Steve Nash is just, he just wasn't a great coach. Terrific player, just not a great coach. And I just don't think it's necessarily his fault, because he just wasn't ready for that role. He just wasn't ready for that position. I mean, the Nets had championship aspirations. And how often do you see a rookie head coach lead a team to a championship, even when it's stacked that way? You know, even when you have Kevin Durant, even when you have Kyrie Irving, even when you have James Harden, that's just hard. It's still hard to win a championship. So I'm not surprised Steve Nash was fired. I don't know why they hired him, but I think he should have started off in a smaller role, in a smaller team, like a smaller market, smaller expectations is what I guess what I'm looking for. So for example, like when Jason Kidd came into the league, he actually started in Brooklyn as well, but they were terrible. Like they weren't good at all. And then he moved to Milwaukee, I think it was. A little bit better team. He had some playoff success, but nothing great. And look at him now. Like, he's having a great run in Dallas so far. Made it to the Western Conference Finals last year. They're off to a pretty good start this season. So I just think he needed more experience under his belt to be able to handle a team like the Brooklyn Nets with those superstars and those, I'm not going to say egos, but, you know, it's hard to balance those superstar egos all in the same team. So not surprised that they fired him. You know, he was, I know I was talking like Doc Rivers was about to be fired, and I felt like he was on the brink. And if the Sixers continue to play and to lose the way they were losing early on in the season, like they've kind of turned it around as of right now. But if they continued in that trajectory, I was also saying like, yes, Doc Rivers was going to be let go, but it was more Steve Nash who went towards in that same trajectory that I was predicting for Doc Rivers. So I guess what I'm trying to say is like the same scenario, right? Same situation. If he didn't turn it around quick enough, he was going to be let go. Same with Doc. But for Steve Nash, man, I'm not surprised. I do think he'll probably coach in this league again at some point, maybe not anytime soon. But I can see him like 2 or 3 years down the road get a team, you know, the keys to, I don't know, a smaller market team or just a team with smaller expectations, not necessarily championship expectations again, just so he can get that experience. So from the beginning, I didn't think this was a great hiring. I don't know why they did it. You know, I was like, okay, well, I'll give him a shot, see if he can surprise some people. But, you know, it's hard to win in this league, and it's hard to manage three superstars, and they just never were, you know, really figure out how to play together. And that was the turmoil for Steve Nash. So again, not surprised. I do think he'll be, you know, in the league again at some point, maybe 2-3 years down the road, coaching. But I think he needs to come back with a team that has little to no expectations, so he can get that experience under his belt and then become a great coach. Because he was one of the greatest, I'm not gonna say greatest players, I mean, he was one of the greatest point guards to ever play. He's a very smart player. You know, he has the intangibles to be a good head coach, but, you know, it's just that experience, I believe, that he just needs. And, you know, it was a good experience in Brooklyn, but, yeah, I think he needs to go to a smaller team with less expectations, and I think he'll see some success. But, yeah, not surprised of this firing at all. So now moving on to my next topic, it is, of course, Joakim Noah on the JJ Redick podcast. And I know I've said it a billion times. I really enjoy his podcast. You guys should definitely watch it. Listen to mine first, of course, and then you guys can go watch JJ's. But in all seriousness, man, I really enjoyed the interview. And like I said, it really brought back some core memories from when I was in high school and even younger, mostly high school. But it just listening to Joakim talk about his time in Chicago was great. There was a couple of things that stood out to me, and I feel like it was a little therapeutic for me, to be honest. And I'll get into that in a second. But the thing that the biggest thing that stood out to me was he was talking about us as a fan base, And he brought up the 2009 Boston Celtics series. And he said that whenever, you know, he runs into a Bulls fan or, you know, what have you, the one thing that people always talk about is that series. And one thing that he mentioned was, it really stood out to me, was that, if you guys remember, we lost that series. And he was like, you know, there were so many other great moments, you know, playoff series that we won. But for some reason, the people of Chicago just love talking about that series, even though we lost. And what he was saying was, I think that shows the character and the embodiment of the people of Chicago, that if you just go out and you give it your all and just grind and put in that effort, even if you lose, people will appreciate the hard work. People will appreciate the grind that you put into the game, as fans, right? And that, I think that's a perfect, you know, testament to Chicago fans, particularly Bulls fans. And he's right, man. Like, one of the things I always talk about, right, with my friends or other Bulls fans, is that 2009 series. To me, it's the greatest first round playoff series ever. And I think it has an argument or a case for one of the greatest series of all time, to be honest. And maybe that's just me being biased, but it was a terrific series. It was a series against the Boston Celtics, 2009, first round. It was the second seed versus, we were the seventh seed. And it had three overtime games or four overtime games. They played like total seven overtimes. Like, it was a crazy series. Now, Boston didn't have Kevin Garnett in that series, so they were a little shorthanded. But that series, Ray Allen was going off, man. He had like a 51-point game at some point. I think it was game six. He hit clutch shot after clutch shot. But the Bulls just kept fighting, man. We just kept staying in there. It was Derrick Rose's first playoff series. So it was the first time we made it to the playoffs in this new era, and it was looking great, man. And I actually went back and rewatched game six. It's on NBA TV or NBA.com. I think I don't know if it's part of League Pass, so you have to watch it. But I watched it like 2 weeks ago, and it was game six, and it was I remember everything from that game. This was 2009, so I don't want to say how, I think I was like 15, maybe I was like a freshman in high school when this series, this is crazy. It's only like, it feels like it was yesterday, but it's been almost 14 years, 14 years since then, which is crazy to think about. But, yeah, that series, man, it was unbelievable. I remember I hated Ray Allen after that. I hated Kevin Garnett, because even though he wasn't playing, he was making some stupid faces out on the bench, against the Bulls. And, but yeah, that game six, man, it was crazy. It was a game where it went to triple overtime. And what kind of sealed the game was Joakim Noah stealing the ball in like a final possession Boston had. He stole it from Paul Pierce, and he ran it, and he led the fast break, and he slammed it, and Paul Pierce fouled out on that possession, and he gave him an and one. And that's where like JJ Redick asked him, he's like, it's arguably one of the greatest, like, most iconic moments in playoff history. Is that like your most iconic moment of your career? And that's why they got into that conversation. But man, it's just having that remembrance, man, of that series and rewatching it, man, it brought back some great memories. Like Ben Gordon, who was a terrible defender, but he was clutch in that series, hitting tough bucket after tough bucket. It was the one series where he hit a tough three. I don't remember what game it was, and he was going back to the bench holding his crotch. I think he got fined for it. But yeah, man, that was a great time to be a Bulls fan. It really was. And Joakim Noah was for sure one of my favorite, is probably my favorite Bull of all time. He's up there, as well as Luol Deng is one of my favorite Bulls ever. Kirk Heinrich's one of my favorite Bulls ever. Andres Nocioni is one of my favorite Bulls ever. I know people were like, who? You remember Nocioni? Yeah, man, I remember Nocioni. I was like, this is when I first started watching basketball, and I can like really recall and really understand what the heck was going on. And I remember watching him, and he's Argentinian. And I remember that kind of stood out to me. I'm like, you know, I don't really see Hispanics or Latinos in the NBA. And he was one of the first ones. So that's why he kind of stood out to me, because he spoke Spanish. You know, I'm Mexican. Completely different continents, but still, there was just something about the fact that he spoke Spanish that stood out to me, and that's why I was a huge fan of Nocioni. But those four or five guys, man, I know. And the other guy was Derrick Rose, obviously. But this is where I get to the point where I say this is therapeutic for me. Because for the longest time, I had a riff against Derrick. And I'm not saying it's completely over with, right? It's completely gone. But when he got injured, you know, they talked about it a little bit on the podcast. And Joakim was talking about, I don't know if you guys remember these commercials, the return commercials that he had with Adidas and getting everybody hyped. Oh, the return, Derrick Rose 2.0 and this and that. And, you know, at that time, you know, when I was, you know, a kid, essentially, I'm like, yo, this guy, man, this guy's going to come back ready, a new man. Like, he's going to come back better than ever. He's going to come as strong as can be. You know what I mean? And he set out that whole season, the following year after he got hurt. This was 2012 when he tore his ACL against the Sixers in the first round. He comes back, or he doesn't come back. The next season comes around, and he misses the entire year. And that's, people were expecting that, like, okay, he's going to miss the year. They were talking about maybe coming back for the playoffs. We made it to the playoffs that year. And I think that was the next year. It was 2013. We had Nate Robinson on the team. And that was the series against Brooklyn in the first round. And we won that series without Derrick. Joakim Noah had an incredible year. He ended up in top five MVP votes, I think. That was the breakout year for Jimmy Butler, where he played every single minute against the Brooklyn Nets in the first round playoff series. Like, he played every single minute. So I remember being frustrated with Derrick because people were talking about, like, oh, Derrick might come back for the playoffs. Like, he's got fresh legs. He's been out for a whole year. He's going to come back right in time for the playoff run. So we were getting hyped. I was getting hyped, and he doesn't come back. So I'm like, yo, man, what the heck? This whole season you were talking about, oh, the return this, the commercials, and what's going on, man? Like, Adidas was showing you working out and getting, you know, getting built and getting back into shape when what have you, right? Comes back the next year. So we win that playoff series against Brooklyn. We go on to the second round. I don't remember who we played in the second round. It might have been, I think it was Miami, and we lost in that second round. He comes back the next year. He only plays, like, I think, like, 9 games, and then he tore his meniscus. Misses the entire year again. I'm like, yo, bro, what you doing, man? And around the same time, Russell Westbrook tore his meniscus. If you guys remember, I think it was Patrick Beverley, who they're teammates now, which is ironic. They hated each other for the longest time because of this. If you guys don't remember Patrick Beverley, it was a playoff series. It was the Rockets versus the Thunder. Russ was going to call a timeout. He passes half court. He was about to call timeout, and Beverly being Beverly, he goes and he tries to, you know, steal the ball because he knows Russ is going to go call timeout, and his knee collides with Russ's and he tore his meniscus. Unnecessary play on behalf of Beverly. So he did injure Russ. Not intentionally. I don't think it was intentionally, but it was just kind of what happened on because of that play. Russ has surgery and he comes back a couple months later, like sometime in the middle of the next year. He doesn't miss a whole season. So in my mind, I'm like, yo, bro, I understand the ACL. I understand that takes a long time to get back with or to get back from. You know what I mean? Russ just had the same injury you just did, meniscus. He comes back fine. You were sitting out a whole season. Like, what is going on, bro? So that's when I started to really feel a certain type of way against Derrick. And then he came out and said something about, I don't know if this was after the ACL. I can't remember if this was after the ACL or the MCL when he said, oh, I just want to be healthy for when my kid graduates high school and this and that. Like, I want to be able to walk around when he's graduating high school. I'm like, bro, that's like an 18 years. What are you talking about? You're getting paid to play now. Why is that an excuse? Why are you thinking about the future when we're trying to win right now? What are you talking about? So that whole thing with him is what really turned the tides for me against him. So I'm like, all right, bro, you're filming these commercials of the return. You know, people are hyping it up. Team makes the playoffs. You got the freshest legs on the bench. These guys are exhausted because Tibbs, if you guys remember, Tibbs loves to run his team to the ground. Jimmy Butler's playing every single minute of that playoff series. Joakim Noah's playing with, I think, his plantar fasciitis still, or he had some sort of injury. Luol Deng's playing with a torn ligament in his thumb. And you're sitting on the bench, bro, because you don't want to get injured because you want to go to see your kid's graduation in 18 years. 18 years from now. So that's when I kind of started really, like I said, feeling a certain type of way against Derrick. And I just kind of lost that that love for him, man. And it really kind of stood out to me because when they were talking about it, Joakim said he kind of brought hope to the Bulls. Like, he brought hope whenever, he said, whenever Derrick Rose was on there, you knew you had a fighting chance to win. Like, that's how special Derrick was. Like, no matter what was going on, if they were down 20, they were up 10, it doesn't matter. They knew as long as Derrick was out there, they had a chance to win. Like, that's how special he was. And I think that's what it was, man. I think that's what it was for me. Like, knowing that we had Derrick, as great as he was, I'm like, no matter what happens, we have Derrick. We have a chance to win. We have an opportunity to win a championship. So he's right. We had that hope. And I'm talking about me personally, man. I'm like, we have hope to win a title in the next couple of seasons. And then he does this. So that's why I said this was therapeutic for me, man, because I needed this. I needed to get to get to this point. I needed this to get over my my hatred for Derrick, because we didn't win a championship because he was too busy worrying about his kids' graduation in 18 years. But for real, man, I think as I get older, I understand someone like myself who's gone through injuries, not as crazy injuries as that, but you know, I've had to deal with some knee injuries in the past playing basketball, and I know it messes with you, but I always viewed it as, you know, you're getting paid millions of dollars. I'm out here just playing street basketball. You know, I'm just playing with my friends and I get hurt. You're getting paid millions of dollars. This is your job. This is what you should be doing. But I never really understood the mental aspect it takes to get over that hump, even if you're getting paid millions of dollars. You know what I mean? So now I look back, I'm like, okay, I can understand maybe he had nothing to do with those commercials, right? Like, I'm just putting this out as an example. Like, I don't, Joakim didn't mention this or he didn't say anything, but, you know, maybe Adidas was the one obviously pushing for these commercials for his shoes because that's who he was with to sell his shoes, right? So everyone wants to, they're trying to marketize that situation from, you know, use really Derek's situation and his injuries to milk it and make money, right? And I didn't view it that way back then. Now I view it as, I could see that's a potential possibility, and Derek had nothing to do with it, and he had nothing to do with these commercials. But if, because he's under contract and he's kind of obligated to do this because of a shoe deal, I wasn't thinking about that back then. I wasn't thinking about that when I was 16, 17 years old. I'm thinking about that now. Now that makes sense. You know what I mean? And at the time, he was only 21, 22 years old, and he's over here talking about his kid. It makes sense, bro. Like, it makes sense. Like, he probably wasn't mature enough to respond correctly, you know? And I understand, Derek. I understand where you're coming from now, bro. I really want to say, I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry. I held this hatred and I'm not going to say I didn't hate him. I'm not going to say I hated him, but I did have this sorrow, I guess, this thing that this dark cloud over me, because he was our hope, man. He was, I know I'm being dramatic about this, but I'm being for real, man. If you lived through the Derrick Rose era in Chicago, you know what was different, man. We had these expectations to go out and win a championship, and all that just went down the drain once he got hurt. And it was sad, man. It was sad. And we only made it to the Eastern Conference Finals and we lost to Miami. And that was another reason why I hated, because I'm like, I hate Miami. I hated LeBron. I hated Wade. I hated Chris Bosh. One, because they teamed up to win championships, but because they also had a possibility to come to Chicago and they didn't. And interesting fact was that Joakim Noah said that Chris Bosh had told him that he was coming to Chicago. Like, it was a done deal. He was coming to Chicago. So Joakim's like, oh, if Bosh is coming, then we're going to get Wade and we're going to get Bron. Joakim's like, I don't care, man. And he's like that mentality, like that Russell mentality. Like, if you're not part of my team, I'm coming after you. I hate you. If you're part of my team, we cool, man. It's fine. You know, we're going to chop it up. We're going to be friends. We're going to go on and win championships. So that's what Joakim was saying. He's like, the animosity really started against them, against LeBron, against the Heat, because of that. Because Bosh had told me that he was coming to Chicago and he didn't. And he was the only one that was doing the recruiting. He said Derrick Rose wasn't trying to do no recruiting. He really felt like he was going to do this on his own, like he didn't need no help, which is respectable and admirable. But at the same time, bro, what are you doing? You have LeBron James, who is the second greatest player of all time. Obviously not at that time, but you knew how great he was. You had Dwayne Wade. You have Chris Bosh. Can you imagine a starting lineup with Derrick Rose, Dwayne Wade, LeBron James, Chris Bosh, and Joakim Noah with Luol Deng coming off the bench? Like, what are you thinking, bro? Even if we got two out of the three, even if it was just LeBron and Bosh and Wade stayed in Miami, that's cool. I don't care. We got two of the biggest fish in that free agency. And who did we stick with? And who did we come up with? And who did we end up with? Carlos Boozer. Carlos Boozer, who was a great offensive player, but he was trash on defense. Terrible defender. One of the worst defenders I've ever seen in my life. We got Carlos Boozer and his Sharpie-filled buzz cut, his Sharpie-filled hairline. That's who we ended up with instead of Chris Bosh, Dwayne Wade, and LeBron James. So all that pent up, all that build up inside, you guys can see why I have some animosity towards Derek. But it's been over a decade now. I moved on from it. I understand, you know, I view it from a different lens now. I understand where Derek was coming from. I understand how maybe, you know, it's not as simple as, all right, you know, yes, I'm technically healthy, but I'm not in in-game shape. I haven't played in over a year. You know, he might have just hurt our team more than anything. But at the time, I was just thinking, you have the freshest legs on the team, man. No matter what happens, you give us hope. You give us hope. Even if you're not in game shape, the fact that you are out there, man, would mean the world to us. Would mean the world to the city of Chicago. And he didn't do that, man. He didn't do that. Now, I know there's a ton of people, I would say a majority of the Chicago Bulls fans, still love Derek because he's from Chicago. And they remember that time, you know, where he brought that hope to the city. You know, and then, but there's also fans that were like me who, yes, we remember that, but we also have some type of remorse because he also took that away from us with his injuries. So, yeah, man. Sorry, that was a long rant, but I really got all that from that interview with Joakim, and I really enjoyed it. But yeah, man, if you guys have an opportunity, especially if you're a Bulls fan, go watch that interview of Joakim Noah on the JJ Reddit podcast, because it was great and it really brings back some great memories. And some a fun fact before I end this segment, me and Joakim have the same birthday, so that's probably also why Joakim's so high on my favorite player of all time list. But yeah, I really love Joakim. Joakim was one of my favorite players. He still is one of my favorite players of all time, even though he was unorthodox. His jump shot was unorthodox. It was weird, but just the heart and the soul and the energy he brought every single game, man. It was incredible to watch, and I loved him. So, rant done. Now moving on to my final topic of discussion. It is my segment, Team of the Week. And like I said before, my team for this week is the Cleveland Cavaliers. Man, they were fun to watch. They were really, really fun to watch. I definitely recommend you guys follow this team for the rest of the year. I don't even know where to begin because, man, they were just fun to watch, man. They're a great team. I was really high on them coming into the season. And I feel like I'm not surprised by where they're at right now. So their current standing is they're 8-5 and they're fourth in the East. They have the second best offense as of right now and the fourth best defense as of right now. They're also second in net rating. So, second most points differential, in the league. Donovan Mitchell, man. I know it's really, really early so let me preface with that. But he is in the MVP conversation for me and just in general. I think he is fourth right now on the MVP ladder behind Tatum, Giannis, I think, and Luka. I think those are the three guys that are ahead of him, and then he's fourth. Rightfully so, man. He's averaging 31 points a game, 31.6 to be exact, 6 assists, 4 boards. He's shooting 51% from the field, 43% from 3 off 9 attempts, 87.5% from the line, and he's shooting 65% true shooting percentage. So he's having a very, very good year, and he's playing great defense. You know, he was kind of known to be a defender coming out of college, but he also kind of said on the JJ Reddit podcast, I'm just going to continue to plug this podcast until he recognizes me. But he said basically when he was in Utah, that he kind of had to change his game up a little bit because there was nobody to get they were, where were they going to get the offense from? So he had to become the number one scoring option on that team. So that's why he kind of fell off in his defense a little bit, but he's definitely picked it up this year. He's been a solid defender. He's on a much better defensive team. I know Utah was solid because of Rudy, but all around, the Cleveland Cavaliers have a really, really good defense, so it makes it easier for him to play defense. You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't have to worry about so much on the defensive side of the ball as he would have in Utah, because he's got a lot of players to back him up, and they, like I said, they have a great team defense, so it's easier for him to defend, and you can see it when you're watching play. So Donovan Mitchell, man, he's having a terrific season. I think he's definitely deserving of being in the MVP conversation as of right now. And I think he's for sure top 10 player of the season, top five at the moment, I believe. So Donovan Mitchell, man, great year. And he's kind of having, I'm not gonna say a breakout year, because, you know, he's had some great playoff performances, but he's having a really, really good year. Next guy online is Darius Garland. I didn't really watch a ton of the Cavs last year, so I know he's been having a lot of hype. He was an all-star last year. But again, I didn't really watch them last year, so I didn't know much about him up until now. And he's a very good offensive player. And he's a solid defender, but offensively right now, he's averaging 21 points per game, 8 assists. He's only shooting 39% from the field, though, 40% from 3 off 7 attempts. So the thing about him, though, that I've noticed is he's still young, so he's still got a lot of game to develop. Is his forcing up shots. Like, he settles for his shot a lot, and he forces up shots that he doesn't really necessarily have to. And I think you can see that in his field goal percentage. He's averaging 39% from the field. Like, his 3-point percentage is higher than his field goal percentage, which is crazy to me. But I just think he needs to be able to learn to be able to get to his spot a little better, and not force his shot so much. But he's a terrific playmaker. He's a solid defender. But that's the biggest thing that I noticed watching him play, is that he tends to settle a lot. And, you know, that's why his field goal percentage is where it's at. But he's got a terrific step back. He's got some nice handles, got nice dribble moves. He can get to the cup pretty well. But that's the only thing that defensively you can always improve, but offensively, that was the biggest thing that I noticed from him, was his jacking up of his shots. Doesn't necessarily need to, but those are the biggest thing. I think the duo between D. Mitch and Garland works, but what I did see was a lot of, for example, like the game against Boston, there was a game they had against Boston. There was a lot of kind of taking turns, like D. Mitch would give it to Garland and they would do like an ISO, or they would run the offense to Garland and then the next position would be D. Mitch. They just kind of like, I don't know. I wish there was a little bit more fluidity with them and their offense, as good as their offense is. But I think a lot of that has to do with a lot of their outside shooting, and the other guys are just some solid scorers and can make the game easier for Mitch and Darius Garland. So for example, like D. Mitch will bring up the floor and then they'll run the offense. Like, he'll be the point guard for that position, and the other position will be Darius Garland. I just wish there was a little bit more fluidity. It seemed like they don't really necessarily have an identity as to how they play together, really, but it's working. It's working. They're the second best offense in the league. So whatever they're doing is working. It just, when you're watching it, it just seems a little awkward. Like, D. Mitch, like, yeah, it's almost like, here, you take the ball. It's your turn. Like, nah, it's your turn. Here, you take the ball. You know, they're just passing it back and forth and waiting for someone to kind of make a play. And I just wish it was a little bit more fluid between them two. But other than that, man, that's the only two things that I really noticed and stood out to me from them when they're on the court together. Another guy that's really standing out to me, and I think this might sound crazy, but I think he's probably been the second most impactful player on the team, is probably Kevin Love. I know some people are going to say, well, some people are probably going to question that. That might've been an outlandish statement, but I think Kevin Love has been a terrific piece to this team. Like, he's coming off the bench. He's having a career high, in true shooting percentage, second highest win shares per 48 minutes. Behind Donovan Mitchell, and he's coming off the bench. So, like, his impact is definitely there. He has a 6.7 box plus minus. So his advanced analytics are pretty good. He's only averaging like 12 points a game, averaging like, I think, a couple boards, like five, six boards. But he's made some big baskets. You know, you can tell he comes off the bench and he gives him a spark. scoring wise and just making effort plays, his little outlet passes. Like you can tell he runs well with this, like his chemistry with this unit, with this team is great. So he was something that really stood out to me. Like, wow, Kevin Love he's really embraced that sixth man kind of role, sixth, seventh man, because they also got Caris LeVert coming off the bench, who is also a bucket. You know, I think he's having a solid season. He's a little inconsistent. Some games he'll have like maybe 8-12 points. And then he had that one game where it was both him, I think him and D. Mitchell at 40. I don't remember who it was against. But yeah, I mean, Caris is also another guy who can create his own offense. That's one thing I forgot to mention. Darius Garland, his ability to create his own shot is pretty good. But again, a lot of it can be forced and some contested shots. But same thing with Caris LeVert. I mean, he's coming off the bench. He was a very good player out in Brooklyn before he went to Indiana. I didn't really watch much of him in Indy. But now in Cleveland, I think he's found a solid role, like a sixth man, kind of like a Jordan Clarkson out in Utah. He's a solid scorer, can create his own shot, just solid playmaker. He's a solid passer. So yeah, that's a great rotation between D. Mitch, Darius Garland, and Caris LeVert to be able to switch those three guys. And you have three solid guards that you can keep in the game at any point in time, at all times. It's a luxury for sure. Some of the other role guys, Evan Mobley. I saw a little bit about from him last year. He's a solid player. This year, you can tell he's still a little young. He's still a little bit raw, but he's still solid. Great defender. Has a solid mid-range game. But obviously, he just needs to. I think he's only averaging 14 points a game right now. Not terrible, especially when you got two great scorers in D. Mitch and Darius Garland. You know, he's not going to have great scoring opportunities, but when he gets the ball in his hands, he makes some solid plays out in the post, in the mid range. He is a solid passer from the post. Solid, great defender. I was going to say solid defender, but he's more than a solid defender. He's a very good defender. Jared Allen as well, like him and his paint presence is definitely there. They just have great size, man. They have really, and they really use it against the Boston Celtics in a couple of games that I watched. They were down big against the Boston Celtics. They really used their body in the paint, fed it to Jared Allen in the post, to Evan Mobley in the post, and Celtics couldn't really do much. Like Marcus Smart's a great defender, but he's just gonna get bodied by these guys because of their height. You know, like he can kind of hold his own, but he's too small for these guys. So they really use that to their advantage. And anybody who's undersized, man, for example, like a team like the Brooklyn Nets come playoff time. The Bucks have size, so they'll be fine. Even someone like Miami who lost PJ Tucker, like Bam can hold his own, but I mean they got several guys, you know, and Love, Mobley, and Allen that can they have great long wing defenders and they can use them in the paint offensively. He's gotta know how to use them sometimes, but and not just to rely so much on the 3-point shot. So that's what I like about this team, man. They have great rotation players, they have a great bench, they have great size, very good defense. Can really score. They can really shoot. Dean Wade, solid shooter. I think he's shooting like, I think he has the best shooting percentage on the team. Very good 3-point shooter. Like this team is solid, man. Just up and down. They have a really good team. What's his name? The European guy. Osman. I can't remember his full name, man. And I'm kind of ashamed of it because I really liked his game. Like he's a solid shooter. He's a solid scorer. Great playmaker. Coming off the bench, but overall, man, I'm really impressed from what I'm seeing in Cleveland. I think they can definitely finish top four. They can really make the Eastern Conference Finals, to be honest. Finals, I don't know. But I didn't expect Boston to make the finals last year, but they can really make some noise, man. It'll be, if it's them, Milwaukee in the Eastern Conference Finals or them in Boston, I think it'd be a great, great series. I think out East, the top three teams right now are Milwaukee, Boston, and the Cavs. I think those are the three best teams in the East as of right now. I think Philly's up there potentially, but to me, through these first 3 weeks of the season, those are the three are the top three teams in my opinion, out East. But you know, still really early. But yeah, man, I really like Cleveland. Great team. You guys should definitely watch them if you haven't watched them yet. Pay attention to Donovan Mitchell, man. He's having a great season, MVP year in my opinion. But overall, man, yeah. Cavs, big on them. I think their ceiling is definitely the Eastern Conference Finals. And if they reach that, you know, that's a successful season. So, Cavs, I'm going to keep my eye on you. And you guys should too. Now, before I end this episode, I did want to remind you guys of something. Something kind of big. It is World Cup week. This week is the start of the 2022 World Cup out in Qatar. Or as one of my econ professors said, it is actually Cotter. So, yeah, man, if you guys did not know that, I'm not going to say I'm a huge soccer fan and I'm an avid soccer fan, but I do love the game of soccer. And it's kind of grown on me as I've gotten older. So I'm really excited. I'm looking forward to the World Cup this year. But yeah, just wanted to let you guys know that. I wanted to give you guys a reminder. If you guys didn't know, you probably don't care about it then. But the first game of the tournament is on Sunday. It is Qatar against Ecuador. And then I think Mexico's first game is on Monday or Tuesday of next week. But yeah, I am really excited. We'll see how far Mexico goes. I think they're only going to be like round of 16, like they always do. But make it further than that, we'll see what happens. But this is also going to be the last World Cup for Messi and Cristiano. So you guys should definitely tune in and watch this World Cup, because this will be the last time we see two of the greatest football players of all time. The two greatest football players of all time in their final World Cup. So there's a lot up at stake in this World Cup. And it's just, you know, there's a lot of things going on in the world right now. And I think World Cup coming around is a perfect time. And I think we all need this. So enjoy the World Cup, man. Thank you guys so much for listening. And as always, make sure you guys like, comment, and subscribe on whatever you're listening from. Make sure you guys follow me on all my social media platforms @aroundthenba_podcast. And I'll see you guys next time.